As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown! Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit there.
Plus minus.
Driving again. Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. You hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to a new episode of Warriors Plus Minus. We've got the gang here. Well, we've got one full member, Tim Kawakami. We got another full member in Marcus Thompson. I don't know what percentage of Anthony Slater we got.
Just because of my rough night in L.A.? Is that the...
I mean, you were in L.A. on a day game? A day game, which means you had all night after?
Yeah, I actually went to part of the Lakers Pistons. It was kind of a crazy... I've never covered the front side of a doubleheader, an NBA doubleheader, where you get done with postgame, you go right... Usually, I mean, you guys know if you're right in the arena for 2 hours, like the arena's emptying out. It's kind of almost like a spooky place. No, it was like livening up because the Lakers aura was coming in and all the writers, and Frank Vogel was doing his pregame press conference in the Staples Center press room, which was weird. So I'm sitting there writing, like Frank Vogel's right behind me, like doing a pregame press conference, Frank Vogel under heat. And then I finished up and I was like, I'll go watch some of this game. So I watched some Lakers, and then yes, you're right, Marcus, LA Live. I was done with my work by, 7, 8 p.m. I had a decent night.
Oh, that was right in time on a Sunday night.
Later.
I have a great story from the doubleheaders at Staples Center. Because, the Warriors used to be frequent 12:30 guests against the Clippers. TK, you remember them days?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't cover many of them, but yeah. I remember. Oh, this was not unfamiliar.
This is very common. It's actually surprising that they will put the Warriors at a 12:30 game at this point. So, 12:30 game. Warriors Clippers, just like you said, the stadium starts livening up. Finish my story. Watch the first quarter, and midway through the second quarter, I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna go to my room, watch it from the game. Watch the rest of the Laker game from my hotel room. I had an early flight.
I know which game this is.
I get to my room, turn on the game, and Kobe's going for 81. And I'm sitting here like, I really just left one of the great games in NBA history because of the dreaded 12:30 game had me whooped. Unbelievable.
I just remember watching that from home because it was NFL playoffs. Like I messaged Adonde, like, you better watch this game. And it was like, he was in the Seattle press box watching a Seahawks game or something. That way to go. Nice call.
And I was there for the first half though.
Yeah, for 36 points of 81.
I saw most of them. I'll just say
in this doubleheader, hey, I covered the Lakers when I was down there, so I almost never had the day part of it. I was the day part. Yeah, I was coming in and people were walking out. They're gonna go, okay, this is not the main event. I'm coming in for the main event.
I was the day part, Slater. I was 12:30.
The funny part about yesterday is 12:30 was the better game. I mean, you know, it's the hottest team in the league with this, like, you know, local fan base, essentially, where, like, they took over Clippers Arena. And the Clippers are better than the Lakers right now. And the night game was, you know, there was still a lot of intrigue because Frank Vogel's job seems to be teetering a little bit, as the Lakers are. But it was Lakers Pistons.
Just a bit.
I mean, it was a lot. It was one of the worst teams in the league against one of the rougher stories of the league early on.
Let's talk about the game a little bit. I mean, I thought the Clippers were okay. I knew their defensive rating was very good. So them looking not so good, Slater, what was that? Them having a bad day. Reggie Jackson was, I just looked at the box score and then I watched the game and it was like nothing. He was not there. And we've talked about him. He's probably the second best player on that team right now with Kawhi out. What the hell happened to them? Or was it just the Warriors turning it up defensively? Because
it's a bad matchup for the Clippers.
Yeah. Well, Reggie's had a couple bad games against the Warriors this season. They don't have a very good offense. They turn it over a ton. They turn it over 24 times. Steph had 5 first half steals, 6 total. Gary Payton had 4. I think the Warriors had 19 steals.
19 steals.
That's a crazy number. That's insane.
You never see that. You never see that. It is ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, you watch the game, you go, yeah, the freaking Clippers were just driving into the lane with their head down and just flinging it somewhere, and the Warriors would just go, thank you very much, let's go back down the other side. But I'm not sure if that's just the Clippers just were just bad or the Warriors are just this
both
great
right
defense.
Now, at least. But, you know, I actually do like the way the Clippers match up defensively, and, like, that was some of the talk pregame, and I kind of thought the Warriors might have a tougher time in the game and maybe even lose it, particularly with the afternoon. And I was kind of getting ready to write, like, hey, this is the type of defense that could give the Warriors trouble, whereas Ty Lue, who has turned himself, I think, into like a top 5, top 10 coach, tactically knowing the Warriors, and then a lot of versatile, switchy defenders. And, you know, they did defend the Warriors pretty well. What was it, like 44-42 at half?
61-62, whatever, in a second.
Yeah, and like really the Warriors won because of two spurts. It was the Jordan Poole 4 threes at the end of the third quarter after Hartenstein flexes over him, and then obviously, you know, the Steph ref situation, which we can get into if you want. But this is the type of team the Clippers are. Second-ranked defense, like I don't know where they are offensively right now, but it's not that good. And they probably wanted to beat the Warriors like 100-94 or something like that. They turned it over too much. You can't turn it over 24 times.
But I think that's part of the problem. Like they're clearly a good defensive team. Their issue is it's not sustainable against the Warriors. And that's kind of the Warriors' MO, is they eventually just wear you down. And that's why we see their big third quarters. Paul George has to guard Steph. And we've seen this when Paul George had to guard Klay Thompson, right? Like he's got to shut out Klay Thompson. It's a lot to ask and then go carry the offense because he's the offense. I mean, and a lot of their offense was him making some crazy tough shots.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, he was hitting some tough shots. And it was like, that's pretty much what they had. Like that was it. I just think that's a lot. If Paul George isn't on Steph, you're just asking for Steph to go off. And if he is on Steph, then he's struggling on off. You got it. That's a lot.
Yeah, they had Terrence Mann on him a lot in the second half. And you could think that's a guy who would be good on Steph.
I think he could be. He has some effectiveness. Yeah. He doesn't have the experience to do it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got the body. You think he's seen someone who could do it. But sometimes when Steph's in that, it's just going to happen. Although I commented about this late last night after watching the DVR. I mean, I heard about this incredible Steph explosion. My God, this is the greatest player of all time. And I get it. He is having an incredible season, has had many incredible seasons. But it was 3 threes, right? It was 3. Like, Poole, as Slater said, Poole had 4.
It was the moment. It was
the moment.
It was the anger behind it.
It was the buildup. Yeah, and they were mad about that weird technical earlier on whoever. Eric Housen technical or whatever the hell that was.
JTA.
It was also against the team that I think people did think it was in Staples. It was against the Clippers, who they thought would be a tougher time. I do think it was a lot of factors into it.
Big factor here. They were mad at the refs. They thought the refs were having a terrible game. And I don't even necessarily mean like they thought they were getting jobbed. It was just like they thought the calls were inconsistent. It was a really physical game. Again, this is what the Clippers want to drag you into, this physical game where they're doing a lot of bumping and stuff off ball. There was one offensive foul call on Steph, and I wrote about it, that like really pissed him off, and the bench was really going where like it was, he passed it and Reggie Jackson kind of ran into him and fell down, and they thought it was a flop, and they were mad, like, really, that's the foul you call in this physical game? And then a minute later, it's a situation where I thought he was getting ejected. He ran at the referee.
Pertratus, yeah, right? Is that how you pronounce his name? Yeah. Geminitas Pertratus. Yeah, that
and didn't stop that is, either, by the way.
Yeah, like, no, that is a ejection in at least 60% of the time. And it was Steph. Maybe that's why he doesn't get ejected there. But and maybe Steph knew that. He gets ejected there. They could lose. We talked about that with Draymond. You have to talk about that with Steph here. But it was also a flashpoint for the emotion.
JT, we got a technical earlier. The one you were talking about, like, took Steph away. If Steph kept going.
Yeah, he was going. He kept going. He didn't stop.
He was, as Marcus pointed out, he didn't throw the mouthpiece. That would have got him ejected. That would have got him
mouthpiece
ejected.
Is, you know, what's guaranteed.
Funny? I was talking to, chatted with some referee sources, whatever, later, but they said he.
Slater.
Look at Slater with referee sources. This is legendary right here.
He really should have been tossed for giving the ref the technical, and apparently they had talked to the referees and said they didn't see it in the moment. They had turned and didn't see the fact, and it wouldn't have mattered at that point because that was after the three threes that I think put him up 18, so they would have won even if he got tossed. But they're like, that was an ejection.
I wonder if he can get fined for that. I think he might get fined for that.
The next time he sees that ref, he's probably getting ejected. He's just gonna get a quick tee.
I don't think the Warriors are going to see any of those three guys in the playoffs. I'll put it that way. I don't think those guys, maybe Forte, I'm not sure, as one of the early rounds, but I don't think Geminitis Pertratus is going to be in the playoffs. Probably not a big deal.
Can we just acknowledge when Steph gets in that mode, he's super disrespectful to refs.
Oh my God.
Like, he doesn't go there often. When he goes there, he's like, I'm getting my money's worth.
And he keeps it going. Turned into he like keeps a little
petty war out there too, yeah. Where he then hit a three in the corner, but they waved it off because of an illegal screen, and they were convinced that the referee was mad at Steph for the whole situation, so they waved it off. And then Steph went over. I don't even know who was sitting courtside, but he went over to some fan and he was pointing at the ref. You could tell he was telling him, like, this guy right here, you know, blah blah blah. I'm like, he was like they legitimately wouldn't let it go for like 10 minutes.
Man, hey, that's firing up. I mean, you know, you understand that players are competitive. They rev themselves up in certain, you know, different ways. Maybe other things have been building up. It was a little over the top. I don't think there's a question about it. And again, I'm not seeking for him to get fined, but that T gesture I thought was the most egregious thing. And I mean, it's mocking a referee publicly, mocking him minutes after.
I couldn't believe he did that. Yeah. I could not believe he did that.
Yeah. It is just, that is not what you're supposed to do. It's certainly not what a superstar is supposed to do. But hey, this is, he gets revved up. He gets heat in the moment. This is part of the reason.
Yeah,
why
once
he's
gone, like, he's gone. Like, he's in that space.
Yeah. What are you gonna do about it? And again, you know, we had this Marcus, your connoisseur of Steph moments. The angriest he's been since that game six in Cleveland.
Remember when he was taunting the ref, like pointing at him, like,
oh, was that the lip? No, that
no,
wasn't lip.
No, no, you're talking about is Minnesota. It was
Minnesota.
Merrick,
yes,
Kogut. It was, yeah. So yeah, Durant, yeah. I remember they were down four. I think they were either down three or four. I think they were down three, and Durant goes up for a three at the top of the key, makes it, and they had called a foul, and was like, and one. Wow, it's like tied the game in the free throw, put him over the top. This is like in the last like 30 seconds of the game.
Weren't they down four, and he hit the three and got the foul? Okay,
the free throw was going to put him ahead, but then the ref went, no, like on the floor, and it was like, really on the floor? He was kind of gathering for the shot. And like they were really going back and forth with this ref, and then they inbound it, and Steph hits the three to tie it anyways to send it to overtime. And then he ran down the court laughing and pointing at the ref.
And him and Andre are like pointing at the ref, like taunting him. Like,
yeah, I heard back on that one, by the way. Like, that's right. The league was not.
No,
happy
and then
about
they came
one,
out post game and were like, yeah. Merrick Kogut. They kept naming him, and it was like,
yeah, that's right. Didn't he, like, in a podcast later, he like named him as one of his number one enemies or something like that? I think I remember that. He mentioned that. It's like,
they were definitely Christ. Talking about him post game. Yeah.
It was wild. Because I think then there was like some questionable calls in overtime, and they were convinced, like, he was in his feelings about it. And like, I mean, you know, when the Warriors get in that mode.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh,
you know,
yes.
What's odd about it all is that, like, Steph, the Warriors fans will complain endlessly about the refs and about how he's grabbed and about how, like, he's fouled off the ball. And he just, like, he won't do it 90% of the time. Like, he'll just eat it as part of it. Like, if you talk to him, he'll be like, yeah, obviously they're fouling, but it doesn't seem like the big deal to him. Like, it's like he got stronger to kind of deal with it, but he obviously gets a lot of contact off the ball and he just kind of eats it. But then it's like the little things that like really kind of set him off. And it's like, obviously you've seen him get body checked before like slammed out of bounds that he don't, and no foul call, and he just won't blow up. But then it'll be like the little thing. It's probably the accumulation of it, right? It's three or four games, and you feel like he's getting calls, and then he explodes. But it feels like there are many other times that would set him off that never do. And then the one that sets him off is like,
well, and the funny thing is, you look at the replay,
Mount Vesuvius.
Yeah, you look at the replay, yeah. And it's like, yeah. I could see you not calling that. He kind of jumped in the man.
No question.
And he didn't even get a shot, really. Like, it was a weird little, like, he didn't even get the shot.
And technically, the ball was off him. So it's like the ref was doing the whole,
we're going to give you the ball, not give you the foul. Well, yeah, but if you rewatch it, you know, with the whole context of what happened afterwards, you could say he's almost going in like, I'm going in to try to get a foul, and I almost don't want this ref to call a foul. So right when I bounce up, I'm going at him. Because it wasn't even like he landed, was like, oh, you really didn't call that? Let me think about this. Oh, I'm mad about this. He like landed and like immediately was up to run at him. It was like, what is going on?
New fiery staff.
Draymond like
fiery staff
was enjoying.
Yeah. Oh, you bet. Draymond's feeling like a proud papa over there.
Draymond, by the way, I'm curious to see the injury report today. Draymond Green's back was hurting post game.
He got lean. Yeah, he hit hard.
They had to call timeout, and then he played great the rest of the game, so you don't think about it. But then he comes in post game, and he's like, he was like kind of like walking in.
Like kind of the opposite what he was talking about. I was dancing down the stairs on a private gym.
And then he sat down and was like, ooh, as he sat down, and then he was walking out, and Ritter was like, Mark Medina's got a couple questions for you, Draymond. And he was walking out, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, my back, as he was walking out. And I was like, oh, is he gonna play in the Suns game?
Yeah, I bet, you know, I predict he'll play in one of the two. He'll play in one. He's not gonna miss both those games. He's gonna play in one of the
one at home games.
They're just, I would say the first one, like, you win in Phoenix. That's like the proof. Like, do you need to beat them again to prove that you're better than Phoenix? Or do you just want to beat them in Phoenix? And that's okay. And you know what? Whatever happens on Friday, it happens on Friday. That's my prediction about this. But I might be wrong. Because Andre's not going to play Tuesday, so who knows? Amazing thing about this is we're talking about Clay and Wiseman not being here, and they're 18-2. They've been out without Iguodala for, the last four games? I'm trying to remember. Like, those
six
are...
Six games.
So those are three rotation players. Now Wiseman, we don't know for sure, but Clay and Iguodala obviously are part of our fixtures as soon as they're healthy, and they're winning these games without them.
Blowing teams out. I mean, it's double digits every game. It's 10 straight double digit home wins. You know, and they just obviously won by 15 on the road. I mean, you think of all their recent tough road games, Brooklyn, it was a blowout. It's why their net rating is like double anybody else. And their only two losses are in overtime and by four in Charlotte, which Marcus, we were there, like that was could have gone either way.
And they don't have Clay, and they don't have Wiseman, and they don't have Iguodala. It's just,
but what they have is like a wave of options to just throw at you. Like they can literally live in game switch it up. Like they can, they barely even use Kuminga anymore, right? They still have that to throw out there.
They're not playing Bielitsa that much. Like, you know, it's just like kind of randomly throw. Yeah. But Otto Porter's been 18
and 10 yesterday. 18 and
10. He's their backup power forward, and I think he plays center sometimes. Stretch five, and you know, GP2 hasn't lit it up recently, but he's an effective piece. Kerr kind of shortened up his rotation last night, I guess, because of the turnovers. But he was
cheese is getting over, minutes, like, baby. What's up with that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, he loves cheese. Yeah, I mean, Chioza settles him down, I guess. But they just kind of throw these different things at people, and it's impressive. I'll tell you what, you know, look, we can talk about him. We've talked about him before. Andrew Wiggins has been really good, like on, you know, two ways, defending guys, getting buckets. Like, they need a bucket. Like I've said, like, you can't just say, Andrew, go get us a bucket. I think he's doing that in the last 10 games. Just go get a bucket. And he goes and get a bucket.
The part that, like, is, I think, unique about this is he's going inside for that bucket. It's not a 22-foot step back. He's like, you know what? I'm getting to the front of the rim, and I'm bullying you. That feels very new.
Although the recent free throw struggles might change that a little bit, I think. Because he was doing that when he was shooting 80% free throws, and that is not what he's doing recently. But still, I think they love to see it. He should be encouraged to do that. I got a 6'5" guy I think I could beat down low. Get me the ball. And they're loving it, and they're getting, you know, that efficient twos. Those are very, very important because the threes come and go. Even with Steph, the threes come and go. the efficient twos turn this team into a team that can blow out anybody in my, with that defense, especially with that defense, because we know if it's close, Steph could go boom, 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 and it's not close anymore.
And Jordan Poole, obviously.
Those were bigger than Steph's threes. The Jordan Poole threes, I think, were bigger because they changed the scope of the game at a point when it really was up for grabs. And he had not done anything, and he goes boom, 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 boom. Okay, halftime, they're up, whatever. It was gigantic, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it was funny. He had just missed a couple shots. He was 2 of 10. It was late third, and I was like about to put out maybe 6 of 24 against the Clippers this year. Because remember the Clippers home game? That was like the start of his disastrous early season where it was like, teams are adjusting to him, and they're playing physical. How's he going to handle it? And then again, it was like, you know, you got Terrence Mann out there. Bledsoe blocked his shot, just wiped his shot away one time. Right as I was thinking about that, you know, he gets Hartenstein swatted his shot at the rim, and then does the flex over him, gives him the free throw.
Big mistake. So
Isaiah Hartenstein.
They say it was a big mistake. But he's, you know, he goes from 4 to 5 points with the free throw, but there's still 2:17 left in the third, and by the end of the third, he goes from 5 to 17 points. I mean, you win the game right there, really.
That's what Clay's done, right? That I really thought, like, that's what Clay has done. And it just boom, boom, boom. You know, it goes from a 1 point game to a 10 point game. And Jordan Poole isn't always going to do that. They will have Clay to do that at some point soon. But that's how that works. It's just the lethalness of that threat, and that it doesn't have to be Clay. It doesn't have to be Steph. And we've seen Poole come and go, but he'll take those shots. Like we always say that he'll take those shots, and that is when you can do it on that game.
Which means you got to guard him too. You have to guard those shots. You just can't. You can't chill on Poole and all of that stuff. First, you got to guard Steph, obviously, with multiple defenders. And then if you got to guard Poole, this is why Otto Porter's getting so many open shots, right? This is a big reason why, because you have a second guy that you have to guard. Or actually, third, you got Wiggins. You have to guard Wiggins. They end up getting so many open shots that it just wears a defense
and now
down.
This idea that, like, Draymond is just this passing machine out there that is never looking to shoot is gone too, right? I mean, he attacked the rim a few times yesterday. He tried a tomahawk dunk. He did a up and under reverse while they were doing some split action. And you could tell the Clippers are sitting there. Draymond has the ball in the mid post. And, you know, Ty Lue knows all these sets. There, you could tell the Clippers are all looking, all right, the split action, you know, which way is he going? Which way is Looney screening? And as they're doing that, Draymond just pivots and goes and makes a layup. And they're like, oh, yeah, he can do that. I forgot that this passing machine over here can go score sometimes.
Right. And you know what he's not doing, Slater? He's not giving up after he misses a shot. Right. Like, normally he'll miss that one or two and then he'll just stop. But now, like, he's airball floaters. Like, he's missed mid-range jumpers. And he's still taking
threes. I mean, he's had an offensive resurgence, but it's not like it's because, like, he's rediscovered a shot. I'm about to go look right now, but he's made like 5 threes all year or something like that.
He's not taking them that much, but it's the get down the lane, you know, split the middle of the paint and finish. That's what it is, because
being available when the pass is coming, he's taking that up now. He's not, remember how he would get the pass in the lane and then look to pass it out? Yeah, now he's going up with it. Yeah,
that's LeBron. Like, if Draymond has the ball in the lane, I'm playing the passing lanes. And I think that's still largely true, but occasionally it's not true. And Draymond's trying to finish, and he's actually finishing. And that is, you know who's finished the last couple games, by the way?
Go ahead and say it. Kevon Looney. He's coming around on Looney's later.
He gets a little bump, and usually that's a miss, and it's going in. Like, I
don't know if this has anything to do with it, but now I see every pregame, and even sometimes after practice, Dejan Milojevic, he has Looney go down in the mid post and they start his workout with, it's like one dribble, bumps into Dejan, hook shot, bump. And, like, you know, Dejan's probably six. I think he's like 6'6". He's big, burly Serbian dude.
He is not little.
And he's just sitting there. He's bumping, chest bumping Looney. And, it, like, I don't know if that's helping, but I agree. Looney is sometimes finishing a little bit better through contact.
I was, like, way better than he has been in the past. Like, before, it was probably a 22% shot, and now it's, like, a 60% shot. You know, and they're not easy shots. Like, this is the NBA. Guys are contesting. They're getting bumped. This is what separates the good finishers from the bad finishers. And Kevon is, like, those are big points. Those are huge points because they're available because he's not being guarded, and then someone comes and helps and bumps him. And if you can get four of those a game and he's getting them, you know, go 4-7 on those close-in shots, those are driving. We've seen what Poole's drives do for them, right? I mean, he can finish. He can absolutely finish in traffic. That just opens up so many other things because they're available. Defenses have to react to it. And then if they do react to it, then you can kick it back out and there's Steph standing there with his feet set at the three-point line. These are all things that are working for him. But yes, I noticed that, and I'm going to give Looney credit because I'm tough on him. He's finishing some of those, and he's looking like he's okay with contact and even, you know, okay with getting the free throw line. He's not a good free throw shooter, but you just got to want to shoot him. You can't shy away from him.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Slater, we have to discuss another guy that TK has been hard on, but he's been incredible. Juan Toscano.
Oh, I've not been hard on him lately at all. Yeah, last year I said that. Last year.
In the past.
Yes. Past. I give him full credit.
What does your hat say, Marcus? I think that might have something to do with it.
Eastside Oakland, baby. Let's go. We've been saying the Draymond stuff for a while, but it feels like he owns that role now. Like, there's a couple times where he waved off Steph and brought the ball up. And he's like, he's really doing the fake handoff. He's like taking that over.
Almost too much. Sometimes he goes for you. Like, dude, it's not there.
Yeah.
Like, you already know what he's doing, right? Like, yeah. But the playmaking, he's really kind of getting into his bag with that, feeling comfortable with the ball in his hands. And we know on a team – with all these turnovers, those guys are valuable. Like, that's why Andre Iguodala is so important, because you can put the ball in his hands and Steve Kerr cannot have a conniption, right? He can feel better. And it feels like Juan is becoming that. Without the, you know, Draymond will turn that thing over. Even though he's a secure handler, he's super risky. It feels like Juan is getting really comfortable in that position of playmaker with Steph on the court.
There's a line to bounce, though, because he can get turnover prone, too. If you guys remember the Memphis play-in game, Juan was throwing the ball all over the gym. And that was when he was really important. They had the eight-man rotation. And he was, at that point, probably like their fifth most important player. But he had some really bad turnovers. So, you know, trying to fit in, you know, tight window or...
Yeah, well, that's... Well, Memphis is just tough on them, like, for that stuff, right? Because they know what they're trying to do. And they're playing all the passing lanes, right? They're playing the driving lanes and the passing lanes, go ahead and shoot it to those guys that we're mentioning. And that's what we'll see. And we'll see how Phoenix plays it. I think Phoenix is going to play it like that. But for the bulk of these games, this JTA stuff is incredible for them. It's just incredible for them. It's the defense too. Like they're putting JTA. They're putting Draymond guarded Lillard last game for a large part of it. Like just the ability to have those kind of players is how this runs. And with the Steph obviously going thermonuclear whenever he does, and JTA is right in there. And obviously they want Kuminga to be the same kind of player. And they've got other guys who can do other things, but JTA, Iguodala, Draymond, like that's GP2. You talk about the dynasty's headliners. We all know who they are, but a huge part has been this middle tier of players, always led by Iguodala, who, he's clearly more talented than maybe some of the others, but like that group, you just throw them anywhere. Livingston, you throw them into a spot and they don't lose their minds offensively, and they're kind of shut down guys defensively, and that they've built that up. That's like, we're all talking about how they're giving up defense. It's kind of an old story now, but all of our preseason stuff was they're giving up defense to go for more offense. They've just turned into the greatest defense of all time right now. I think to their surprise, I absolutely think it's to their surprise. Certainly, like from what we were talking from Draymond right before the season, he's like, I don't know about this. But these guys, JTA, GP2, all the initials, guy, Looney, I'll put him in the staff's playing tremendous defense, and Draymond is playing defensive player of the year level. Yeah, this is just a tremendous defensive. I think particularly for the new NBA, where you're not getting pounded down low. Now we'll see if Ayton does it, but Phoenix doesn't really throw it to him 15 times a game. They don't do that. They use
they
him.
Might
as a
try
release.
Though.
Yeah, they use him as a pressure release. I mean, he's like, okay, it's not working over here. Get it back. Switch the floor, and then it gets back to Ayton, and he's got somebody smaller on him. So we'll
Ayton
see.
On the glass is where I would be most concerned. They're not gonna post him up. Now they'll do. It'll be a little bit like Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Houston with Chris Paul and JaVale and Chris Paul and Ayton. It'll be like cat and mouse Draymond stuff. We can get into that matchup with JTA though. He was out of the rotation for like a handful of games and like not that pleased about it, to be honest. And then the Cleveland game came and he was still not in the rotation, and they went down big at half, and like Cleveland was out playing them. There's no energy, no life in the building. And then apparently at halftime, Steve Kerr was like, Juan, you've been out like in front of the team, like Juan, you've been out of the rotation and you should be pissed about it. And I know you're pissed about it, but you're playing in the second half. And that's when he put Juan in it for Kuminga, because Kuminga had a really bad first half, like chucking a couple threes, pretty lifeless. And then, Juan changed that game, and he used him again when they were down double digits a game a few later. And like that does seem to be his role, like in this regular season, monotonous marathon, like he does inject life in certain matchups. He's good in those dogfight games. And I do think Kuminga will inch ahead of him at times. I think there are plenty of people within the organization that would like to see a little bit more Kuminga at times.
At what point do they start like getting like, hold on, hey Steve, come on, man.
That Santa Cruz Warriors team is looking really good right now. Maybe we can move a couple of those guys to the big team. Right now, JTA is kind of filling for Iguodala. Like that's what he's playing some of those minutes. And
yeah,
go get the good forward, go guard him. And
go run the show, like run the point.
Yeah, and yeah. Move the ball around, be somebody's safety valve, somebody's back screening, those sort of things. They work. That works. In this NBA, for sure, it works. He's a great power forward in the modern NBA.
It is crazy because you think about all the guys not available that will be available soon. Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson's getting close. Damian Lee will be back soon. And, a month ago, Damian Lee was their best bench player.
James
Wiseman. Kuminga, who's going to continue to try to push in. Moses Moody was the 14th overall pick. When's the last time we discussed him?
And looked the best in the Santa Cruz game, by the way.
Yes. I would say that's a pretty good lineup there, right? If you just played that group, that would not be a terrible team. Wiseman, Iguodala, Clay, Kuminga, Moody, Damian Lee. That's six guys. Like,
I do think that's part of like how they're kind of overwhelming team. They can really, if this isn't working, we're going another route. Like Damian Lee hasn't played well for, like, he's not making shots. Bielitsa isn't shooting. Otto Porter is hitting shots, right? Like other guys are hitting shots. And then eventually these guys will stop hitting shots. And then Damian Lee will start hitting shots again. Bielitsa will start. Like, they just have these waves, which, in a regular season setting, man, that is almost ideal to overwhelm teams. Like, how demoralizing is it when these dudes, like, Otto Porter is killing you? Like, that's got to be heartbreaking. Well, he's bending down doing that three thing, like oh, I bet they hate to see that, like, because he stays open.
Yeah, and they can give Iguodala more time off. I can think, and it works perfectly for that too, right? They can, and if Clay needs more time off, fine. You know, in fact, you know what? Let's just add 2 games, Clay, or whatever. You know, you need a week off. Once he's come back, that's fine. Like, they can play that out throughout. And you know, I never thought 18-2, but like, it's just a fact. Like, I thought, like,
Slater did
13-7, whatever was going to be, like, that's fine. And it just gives them some breathing room, get to that 4 seed and maybe you lose a little bit, get to the 6. And then by the time you get to March, you're going to make the run for the 3-4 seed. Now they're one, like, they're going to be 1 or 2 is what,
you know,
it's
what else?
Like,
the West stinks. I mean, we're about to see them against the Suns the next 2 games, so that won't be top of mind. But the conference below those two, I mean, I would say below the three, we include Utah, who has better.
The Jazz is 13-7. The Warriors, TK is saying the Warriors would have been good to be the Jazz right now. Like,
yeah. Yes, they would.
It would have been great.
The Jazz actually have a better point differential than Phoenix, and have the top offense. You know, I mean, I think their record belies how dangerous they are, particularly as a regular season team. But you get below that top layer. Mavericks right now are the 4 seed at 10-8. They have a negative point differential. Like, nothing about them and the Jason Kidd situation, and like, it just doesn't scream threat to me at this point. You saw the Clippers yesterday. They're the 5 seed. They're probably the best of this group below. The Lakers situation doesn't seem like the roster it will solve that team's problems. We'll see. Portland, we saw them. They have the 28th ranked defense in basketball.
The team that caused the Warriors the most problems is like
Memphis.
Memphis is like, what the heck happened to Memphis?
Memphis has the 30th ranked defense. They have the worst defense in the NBA.
My good, they didn't look like that against the Warriors, boy.
It is crazy. I mean, and you just think about their personnel, like Desmond Bain, Dylan Brooks, you know, who was hurt for some of this season. Kyle Anderson, Jaren Jackson should be, you would theoretically think. Anyway, and John Morant just hurt his knee recently. I don't know the exact recent update. It was just a sprain, so it's not like he's out for the season. But, you know, you keep going down. Denver's now sitting in the 10th seed. Just lost Michael Porter for the season with the unknown Jamal Murray situation. Like, it's a soft conference right now.
They're 1, 2, or 3, and it's amazing. But, you know, they played a quarter of the season. Like, they're at the quarter pole, basically. They're not showing no signs of slipping to 4, I'll put it that way. They've even had John Hollinger have to write about how good they are. That's how good they are. So this is headed to 1.
Shout out to John Hollinger. Hey, man. We don't get him all right. It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. I read him, and he is smart as hell. He has admitted that he might have misread the Warrior situation, which is what you do when you're a responsible analyst. Absolutely. You know, I don't want to say that we were so right. We didn't see this. We didn't see this. Like,
they didn't see this. The Warriors didn't see
this. No, we saw 15-5 and go, like, what if they can get some of that? And yeah, like I said, 13-7, 14-6. Maybe.
It felt like we were being homers by saying they could get a 4 seed, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Like 4-5. Like, what?
Yeah, I can see him getting the home playoff series. Like, really going out there on a limb. Like,
if you see the West falling, like, you know, we didn't all see the West falling apart like this. Although, we knew the
injuries. I didn't think the West was that good. I didn't think it was this bad. Like,
I thought the Lakers were going to be better. I mean, LeBron and Anthony Davis, just like, so what if they messed around with the back end of that roster? And they did. But just those two guys. I mean, Jesus. And they can't put it together. I mean, they still might. They clearly still might. This is just a really good team. This is just a really good team. And this is what really good teams do. You just do it over the course. Didn't Ethan have a number like 8, the 20-game stretch? Is that's what you basically, you don't switch things up too much after 20 games? I don't know if that's still come about, but then he used to say that. And they're 18-2. And even if they lose to the Phoenix, so, you know, that's not great, but okay, you lost two to probably the best team in the West, maybe the best team in the league. And as I said to Slater, did you see that I got aggregated, Slater, when I talked about the Suns 2 games? If they sweep those 2 games, the Warriors sweep those 2 games, they're going to be the number one seed. I believe this.
Did you get put on like takes?
Just saying that I'm claiming that the Warriors are going to be the best team if they sweep the Suns. MT, you agree with that?
I think they're clear number ones. They're clear number
ones. Yeah, they sweep the Suns this week. Like,
that's what I said. I didn't say the champion. I didn't say championship. I didn't say week on a championship like Barbosa. I just said if they sweep the Suns, they're going to be the number one seed.
I will say this, and we should probably talk about the Suns matchup that's coming on Tuesday. But on paper, Phoenix Suns is the toughest matchup that they got in the West. A healthy, clicking Lakers, I would put there, but the way they look, I feel like they're out of the mix.
I would watch them last night in person. It's just not a good roster. Like, you know, Kent Bazemore was starting for them at the beginning of the season. He's now getting DMPs, by the way. they weren't playing.
Like, they're relying heavily on Malik Monk.
Yeah.
Like, he
Wayne Ellington was getting big minutes. That doesn't scare the Warriors at all. DeAndre Jordan is, like, starting half of their games, and he was cut by the Nets recently. And, you know, it's just put so much of a burden on Davis and LeBron physically, and neither of them look physically, like, ready for it. LeBron keeps dealing with these minor injuries. And then, you know, that's not even to mention the Westbrook conundrum, whatever you want to call it. Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe LeBron, again, will just prove as a one-man force to drag a team into contention. But I just don't see it getting solved.
And he's got Anthony Davis. So you always have to put them to the side. But the rest of it, and at some point LeBron won't be able to be that guy anymore. At some point. We don't know when it's going to be. It might be the season, might not.
You could feel it in the arena last night. He, like, made an and-one layup and then kind of grabbed his abdomen a little bit. And the arena was like, because he had dealt with an abdomen recently. And he was just like, it wasn't like he was on the ground writhing. He was just kind of like, kind of stretching it out a little bit. But it was just like, oh. And, like, even the people on press row were like, is he grabbing at the injury? Because if he is, like, that's another 1 in 6 week coming up if he can't play.
Let's talk about the Suns, though. Like, MT, you were starting down that road. I mean, do you think the Suns are a bad matchup for the Warriors or a good matchup?
Every question with playing the Warriors begins with, how do you guard Steph Curry? Like, what are you going to do? And I think
that's got to be Bridges, right?
I think Phoenix has some good options. They've got Bridges. Chris Paul has been the victim of some of Curry's great moments, but he's still a tough defender in short spurts against Steph. He just has a way to be physical and not get the foul call. Right. Yeah. Low center of gravity. You could spend some time with Jay Crowder on him. Like, that's some physical, that's a body on Steph. I do think they have good answers to the very first question you got to ask with the Warriors is, how do you guard? This is, I think, the Lakers problem. Like, they don't have an answer. Like, the answer is LeBron.
It's sure Portland.
It's always
like, there's Portland's problem, man. Yeah, we go through these teams.
It's always I think they've got a good set of options for what to do with Steph.
I'm curious about Bridges, though, because, like, Bridges is a long, slower wing.
He just gets to a lot of shots, though, man. He gets to a lot of shots.
Steph has had some issues with length, like real strong length. Now, again, he's going to run through all those screens. It'll be determined if they can switch out on him, but I think Bridges is a good option for Steph. I really do.
Poole matters then.
Yes, because Paul CP3 is going
to
be on Poole.
Yeah, because Wiggins is still there. I guess you put Booker on Wiggins. I mean, like, to me, Bridges actually makes sense as a Wiggins matchup. But again, if you're not trying to cut off Wiggins to slow the Warriors, so maybe you do. You know, I don't know. They'll change it up. A lot of it's team defense.
But
right?
If it's not Bridges, who would you put on Curry?
CP, I guess.
I would go Bridges.
It's possible because you can still rely on Booker to carry the offense, right? Like, in days where CP3 is, like, running the show on offense, you just probably don't want him chasing around Steph.
You don't want it all the time anyway, right? You don't want that, except for in some moments. But they got some other guys they could throw out there, you know. Crowder would not be terrible to anticipate the switch, right? Because you're going to get the switch.
Like, those are the two power fours going against
you. Yeah, but what you could do is you could put Bridges or somebody else on Draymond and anticipate the switch, so then that would switch Bridges onto Steph. You know, that's what the Warriors do with some of this, right? They put Draymond on the guy that he's going to get switched, so they switch. So they have it pre-switched already, but we'll see. I mean, and, you know, so who's going to guard Booker for the Warriors?
Wiggins, I would guess, for sure.
Steph guarding. You know, is he Bridges?
No, I would say Steph on CP, you know, Steph and Poole on Bridges, I guess. You know, I'm writing a little bit about this match. I'm going to do, like, a quick little preview today because it is such a big, you know, back-to-back with them. Team defense matters, right? It's not just like Bridges going, you know, go one-on-one with Curry. Like, they're going to target Ayton, right? And JaVale, who's been really good and playing big minutes for them. And it's like Ayton survived against the Clippers small ball last year and, like, super impressively. And I just, as we talk about this as a potential West Finals, like, Ayton against the Draymond at the five lineups are just vital to this matchup.
He has to, like, dominate.
He has to rebound well. He has to get his alley-oops, and he has to not, remember Nurkic and Marcus were sitting next to each other during the Portland game, and it was just like, oh, let's rewatch this play. Oh, Nurkic laid way too far back on this split cut. Didn't read that. Jumped too far out because he thought he was blitzing, but just like left a clear lane behind him. How does Ayton Ayton, and we've talked about this within the Wiseman realm, now that this is a potential big-time playoff matchup, maybe a West Finals, it's like, how does Ayton survive defensively? He was horrible as a rookie defensively. He's gotten much better, had a breakout playoffs, and I think the Warriors are really, particularly in this first couple matchups here, just going to test those waters. Like, how does Ayton deal with some of this Steph stuff that he's not used to? Because, yes, he survived against the Clippers, but this is a different environment to defend in as a big. You know, the Draymond Green small ball five, Steph Curry ecosystem.
Kevon Looney at the rim ecosystem.
No, there you go.
We gotta beware of that. Beware of that. And he did play well against the Warriors last year, but that was before the 15-5, right? I don't think they played
him. They did down the stretch. I was actually talking to Steph a little bit about that game. I need to go relook at it. He was like, yeah, crazy game. They beat Phoenix, and Poole had like 20 off the bench.
Oh, really? God, I don't even remember that.
They beat Phoenix in Utah back-to-back during that. Remember that six-game homestand to end the season?
I remember they played a lot of good teams. I should have remembered. I thought it was Denver in there. But Ayton's a good player. And he could mess around. I mean, it would show that, hey, there's where Wiseman would go, right? That's the matchup you would want Wiseman for. Or not. We'll see. But I think this is not a terrible matchup for the Warriors. I don't think this is a terrible. I think Memphis is like just weirdly so much tougher for them. And we'll see. But Chris Paul's not going to dominate the game for 38 minutes. That's just not him anymore. And so that's a player that's going to, you know, they only have to play in spurts. Bridges is a fantastic defensive player, a great runner, you know, fill the lane, going to hit some threes, but he's not a guy you have to see like, oh my God, here's our defense set up for this guy. And so then it's Booker and it's Ayton. And I think they have options for that. So we'll see. I could be proven wrong. I don't think they're going to win both these games, but I think they're going to be competitive in both and they're going to win one. And they're going to show that they're probably a little bit better than the Suns. Again, that's what's the beauty of it. We're going to see it play out. I don't think this is... maybe I've seen them beat Chris Paul too many times in big games. And that's like when they're talking about, oh, Steph's
that's
had so much trouble
though.
In Staples.
Yeah, that's not
it
nothing.
Is, oh, it's a huge thing. It's a huge thing. But like, oh, Steph's had all this trouble in Staples, had all this. It's a nightmare place. Go, didn't he like put Chris Paul on the ground at Staples Center? He did. That was one of the momentous plays of the early Steph career was putting Chris Paul on the ground with a dribble. And like he gets up for that matchup. He's younger. He's spryer still. And they beat Chris Paul in big games. It's just something that's drilled in my head, and I think they still will. I'm not predicting a sweep. I'm predicting that they'll just look like the better team in these two games.
Klay really matters in this matchup. I mean, as we talk about defensive, you know, like cross matches,
they'll be the number one seed if they sweep if they sweep them without Klay. Good Lord, good Lord.
Klay matters so much because you know, we're talking about Steph probably having to guard CP because you're going to go Wiggins on Booker, and then Poole's kind of guarding Bridges. And you know, Mikal Bridges, you know, when he's really left to his own, can provide 19 suddenly, you know. If you do have Klay in this mix, you could just put Klay on somebody that theoretically, if Klay is Klay, and we'll see. I don't know, it's all interesting.
I do want to see GP2 guarding CP3 a little bit. That's going to be fun. Like, just... An irritant, right? Yes. I mean, it's just
gonna be fun. The thing about the Suns is, I wonder what happens if Ayton can't keep up. They don't really have a good small lineup.
Crowder, right? They go Crowder at the five.
Yeah, they could. They don't.
I don't know if you want to.
They don't, yeah. And they haven't.
Yeah. Well, they got.
And they don't have Sarge anymore. So I think
Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson is.
But if they have some other who's guys. Their five if they go small? If they pull eight, they normally go JaVale.
You're playing a Draymond five lineup, you could certainly have Jay Crowder as your five. They're basically, you know, the similar type of players. It's fine. You can go Cam Johnson in and play small.
I just don't think that's an advantage for them.
No, it's not. I don't think they should. You know, we were saying this during the playoffs last year, like that maybe they should, like, what's going to happen against the Clippers? Do they take DeAndre Ayton off the floor? No, they just said this is who we are and it worked. So I think they need to find out this week, you know, as much as the Warriors need to pick and see what they can figure out against Ayton, I think that the Suns need to find out, you know, how much Ayton can survive in that. And have, you know, it's good to get burned a couple times by the Steph Curry stuff to learn what you got to do against it.
Absolutely. And it's twice in a week. This is going to be good for Phoenix. It's going to be good for them to figure out moving forward. I mean, I think he's playing like 30 minutes a night. Those other 18 minutes matter, man. Like, that's That's huge.
You know, that's been the biggest part of this stretch for them. JaVale McGee's been absolutely awesome.
JaVale. I mean, he's better than what they had, you know, better than going from Frank.
He's better than Frank Kaminsky. For sure.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's like that's just not the way you're going to beat the Warriors. And, you know,
you feel good about JaVale on Steph in the perimeter?
No. And I don't think Phoenix would feel good about it, but what are you going to do? Like, you have to live with it a little bit. You have to try to bug him that way. And, you know, and believe that Kevon or Draymond isn't going to kill you if you blitz Steph. So, and that's what teams do. And then we've seen the Warriors counter it. We've seen the Warriors struggle with that. We'll see. But that's the other thing with, again, maybe it's my big picture thing, is if the Warriors split with the Suns, then Suns adjust to them, whatever. This is how we're going to do. We're figuring it out. Ayton's going to do this. And then the Warriors go, okay,
one has a Hall of Famer coming. Yeah.
Yeah. We got Klay Thompson coming, by the way. Like, that's, you know, that's all great and everything, but we got Klay Thompson coming back. That's just this looming thing. Like, we talk about 18-2. What does it mean? They're better than we thought. And they got Klay freaking Thompson.
It means coming. If they lose both of these games, they're 18-4.
We have Klay Thompson coming. Yeah, with Klay like Thompson coming.
They're
yeah.
18-4, which is like, that's crazy, right? It's just wow. They can lose. I mean, if they walk away, even if they walk away with Phoenix being the clear number one, right, and the Warriors number two, that's by far and away more than anybody thought this season. But it still doesn't change the fact that Phoenix would not want to see the Warriors in the playoffs, like, because these are three dudes with rings, and that's a bit different. I don't think the Warriors can lose. Like, even if they lose,
they don't want to be embarrassed. Like, you don't want to get blown out in any sense. Just not because you don't want to have that team feel good.
Draymond mentioned it in postgame yesterday. They want to snap the win streak, right? That if the Suns get through the Warriors and
they want to be the Milwaukee Bucks to them. And
if the Suns get through this, 2016. Like, Warriors is the story of the league right now. And, like, honestly, there's not been enough attention paid to what the Suns are doing. Like, 16 is a huge win streak. Now, if the Suns beat the Warriors up twice this week, the story of the league shifts to Phoenix. I mean, they'd actually be.
Oh, that turns up. That turns it up for real. Yeah.
So I think the Warriors want to end that. Like, you know, keep the spotlight over here, basically. But I have to go to Warriors practice. They're practicing in L.A. So.
Oh, my. Slater. Slater's got to go. Let's wrap it up.
That's where I don't have to go.
Warriors practice.
Warriors practice. There we go.
This is what I got to do. I got to listen to the Kyle Shanahan conference call later today. Might ask a few questions, too, but that's what I do.
The next time you hear from us, we will know who's the number one team in the West. Tim Kawakami is already saying it will be the Warriors. So we've got that prediction on the books. It has been aggregated on social media. Me and Slater will give far more calculated and restrained, mature takes afterwards. Logical. We want to see it play out first. We'll let TK get like out it. Ahead of the story.
I love to be aggregated. That's what I dream of, aggregation.
Until next time, we're out of here.